This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Dustin Sweetelson coming at you all night long from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Me here, you there. Thanks for making us a part of your night, however you may be tuning in. Sirius XM channel 158, YouTube TV, the Visa Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. In case you missed it on Tuesday night in Major League Baseball, the Dodgers took care of business against the Colorado Rockies. Final score 7-6. That's not the story. Shohei Ohtani, with his 30th home run of the season in that game, trying to match now your favorite for National League MVP, Pete Crow Armstrong, who went yard for the Cubs against the White Sox, which has now made this NL MVP market PCA minus 165, Ohtani plus $1.30. Strongly considering a world now where I just bet plus money on whoever is the underdog here the rest of the way and hope that works out for my bankroll in the end, because I don't think we're done with the flipping. At some point in the season, feels like Shohei Ohtani is going to return to pitching. And if he just pitches a couple times, or let's say for narrative's sake, Shohei Ohtani needs to start in a game for the Dodgers to lock up that one seed, to take it back from Milwaukee as we head towards October, could that be enough of a narrative build for Shohei Ohtani to become your favorite again and laying a price to be National League MVP? That's going to be the story all summer long as we head towards football season. Speaking of football season, what I like to do here on the show, I play a little game called Too High or All Right, All Right, All Right. What we like to do is throw out some futures, have some numbers that jump out to us, and you tell us at VSiN Live, at Dustin Sweetelson, or email the show cashingout@VSiN.com. Is this number too high or is it all right, all right, all right? And I was doing a little bit of work today, reading some quotes out of all these camps, and this one really stuck out to me down in Houston. David Montgomery, speaking to a local beat reporter, talked about his role with this Houston team and said, quote, OC Nick Caley let me know that I will be able to showcase his dual threat ability because I know I can do it. Now, the dual threatness, that doesn't really impact anything that I want to do from the betting market, but it's more the confidence that David Montgomery has, knowing he's going to be on the field, knowing that he is going to be a three-down back in the system, mostly because I don't know if he has all that much competition in the backfield. Woody Marks is fine as a receiving back, as a change of pace. I'm not sure he has the body that can withstand the amount of carries that Houston wants to give David Montgomery, which got me thinking. The number on David Montgomery for rushing touchdowns feels very low at 7.5. And then big picture, rushing touchdown leader, 30-1. Is that number too high? Or all right, all right, all right. Do you want to dance with David Montgomery in a new place down in H-Town? So you look at the numbers for Montgomery over the last three seasons while dealing with Jahmyr Gibbs splitting that backfield in Detroit. 8, 12, 13 touchdowns in the three seasons with the Lions. D'Amico Ryans has already referred to him as the number one back. To me, they brought him in to use him. They didn't bring him in to not use him here as a piece to put them over the top. But I think that his workload's going to increase a lot. One, you have C.J. Stroud, some of the issues he faced down the stretch last year. Some of that's predicated because the offensive line play for the Texans is not very good. Well, what's easier than pass blocking? That would be run blocking. This is a defense-oriented team. Teams that rely on their defense don't want to turn the ball over, which can be an issue if C.J. Stroud is just dropping back too much and chucking around the field. Instead, they now have a reliable ground game with David Montgomery, a veteran who's been through this before. And if you look at recent winners for this award, to lead the league in rushing touchdowns, I think he can be right on pace given the bigger workload this year. Jonathan Taylor led the way with 18 a year ago. James Cook the year prior tied with Jahmyr Gibbs and Derrick Henry at 16. In 2023, Raheem Mostert led the league in rushing touchdowns with 18. Prior to that, Jamal Williams in Detroit with 17. JT again in 2021 with 18. Henry went back-to-back in 20 and 19 with 17 and 16. Basically, when you go back and look at the history of this award, we are looking for around 16, 17 touchdowns, most commonly in that range. The average age of these running backs is about 25.5. You've got Montgomery on the north side of that at 29 years old, but 30 is the cutoff. Just three of the last 13 have been north of 30. Age 26 or younger, 9 of 13. Age 27 or younger, 10 of 13. Three repeat winners overall in Henry, Taylor, and Gurley. But the thing that jumps out to me is you don't have to be elite. You don't have to be the best running back in the league to wind up having the most rushing touchdowns on the season, because Raheem Mostert's done it. Jamal Williams has done it. LeGarrette Blount, Aaron Jones. And you look at the trends here, being on a winning team matters. Why does that matter? Well, winning teams are using the ground game to put opponents away. 11 of the last 13 have been on winning teams. That's 85%. 9 of the last 13 have had 11-plus wins. That's 69%. Average wins is 11.5. If you believe the Texans can win 11, 12 games like I do, then you should be considering David Montgomery here, because the price is just astronomical based on the situation, the workload, the need for him to be that guy on the ground. He's 29 years old. The Texans a year ago, they were 29th in red zone scoring. That's why they brought in David Montgomery. Who's going to take goal line carries away? Who is better built to be a battering ram, to push it through from the 3, the 2, the 1? It's David Montgomery. It's not Woody Marks. It's not Jawar Jordan. It's not Noah Whittington out of Oregon. Over the last 3 years while dealing with Gibbs, he's had 8, 12, 13 in the last 3 seasons. I think because this team needs to be more run-based, he's going to get a bevy of looks, and once they get to the goal line, they know they need to capitalize on those opportunities. They can't afford turnovers. It's going to be all about Montgomery. That's why I like him. 30-1 to lead the league in rushing touchdowns, and I love over 7.5 for him this season. That number feels crazy. I thought we were going to be looking at a 9.5 on David Montgomery. Staying in the NFL, I'm going to throw another long shot your way here. And I bet this a year ago, and unfortunately it didn't come home because of injury. And that is Brock Bowers to be Offensive Player of the Year at 70-1. And in case you didn't know, a tight end's never won this award. That is worth noting here. But I believe Brock Bowers is different, and he's going to function very differently in this Raiders offense. Is that number too high, or is it all right, all right, all right? Do you want to play around with Brock Bowers, Offensive Player of the Year? Email us, cashingout@VSiN.com, at Dustin Sweetelson, at VSiN Live. When you look at what he's accomplished, this is a guy 2 years in, was amazing his first season in the league, led all tight ends in receiving yards, almost 1,200 yards there. And it feels like if he's going to win this award, we need historical. We're going to need over 1,400 yards out of Brock Bowers. I don't think that's crazy to ask when you consider 2 years ago with subpar quarterback play, he was at 1,194. Last year, cut short because of injury, 84 catches, 630 yards in 12 games. But who was throwing him the football? All of a sudden, Kirk Cousins enters the frame. Clint Kubiak is your OC, and there still is no clear number one receiver on the outside. Clint Kubiak, last year, what did he do? He got JSN the Offensive Player of the Year. He funneled the football into the slot, over the middle, over and over again, because that was his best weapon through the air, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Why wouldn't he come in and do the same? Feels like there's a culture shift with the Raiders this year. The objective is to be better, to be more competitive. There is no tanking. There's no living to fight another day. They don't care about the number one pick next year. They have Fernando Mendoza already. But before Mendoza can play, Kirk Cousins is giving it one last go. You think he's just going to go out there and not care about getting the ball to his best weapon in Brock Bowers? I think of Kirk Cousins, if you look at what he did down the stretch last year in Atlanta, when he got that second opportunity with Kyle Pitts especially, all of a sudden Kyle Pitts, who'd been a disappointment for so much of his career since joining the league from Florida, he hit another gear. Kyle Pitts got paid in the offseason. Part of that is because Kirk Cousins knew if he was going to hang on in the league, it was going to be utilizing Kyle Pitts. Brock Bowers and Kyle Pitts don't even play the same position. And Clint Kubiak now has a guy that he can scheme around in Bowers through the air. If you look at what Cousins did with Pitts last year, from October 26th on, 9 for 59 to Pitts, 2 for 14, 2 for 25, 7 for 82, 6 for 90, 11 for a buck 66, 7 for 57, 2 for 16, 6 for 58, averaged 5.5 receptions, 63 yards per game. I think there's a world where Brock Bowers this year is going for 1,500 yards. That'd be a tight end record. Travis Kelce has it back in 2020 with 1,416 yards. He's also going to be the best threat in the red zone for this team. You tell me, can you join me in making history and back Brock Bowers at a huge price at 70-1 to be your Offensive Player of the Year? The next bet I want to bring your way here as part of Too High or All Right, All Right, All Right is another long shot. I promise, on the next show, we will go a little bit shorter down the board. But Heisman Trophy, When I started looking at the potential quarterback options that were long shots, there was one name I kept coming back to, and that was Oklahoma State quarterback Drew Mestemaker. He is going to Oklahoma State, joining his former head coach at North Texas, Eric Morris, and he is 65-1. This is down from about 82-1 2 months ago, but 65-1 still feels pretty palatable. This kid last year at North Texas, almost 69% completion rate, 4,300 yards, 34 passing, 5 rushing touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And oh, by the way, he's got some dudes with him to throw the ball to. He brings his best receiver from North Texas, who will operate out of the slot, a transfer from Wake, a transfer from Illinois. And last year was his first season as a starter. We are not even factoring in there's a world where Drew Mestemaker is just scratching the surface. He could be even better now. Now that he has better facilities and better weapons and more help around him, we might just barely be seeing what Mr. Mestemaker is capable of. I'm not sure if Oklahoma State will have the wins necessary. Win total, 5.5 at heavy juice, 6.5 on them right now. Can they get to 7 or 8, though? And can Mestemaker lead them there with his right arm? Because if he has 45 touchdowns, which I don't think is crazy, playing in a wide open Big 12, 11 more than last year, factoring in some improvement, I think Mestemaker has a shot to be there, at least invited at the end of the season. Football season's almost here. The sharp money's already moving. Here's how the sharp play sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from 4 major books, all of it filtered, sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. It all feeds a live performance terminal. Check it out anytime. No login, no paywall. No one else in the industry runs it like them because most records couldn't survive at the sharp plays. Their record gets audited daily. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycle plays. Follow the sharp.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Late night baseball news. We are going to resume action at Wrigley Field. This via Jesse Rogers of ESPN. Cubs, White Sox resuming 11:15 Central Time. I just looked. The clock just struck 11:15 Central Time. Back in action. We will be with that game tied at 3s in the 8th inning. Cubs -199, +171 with the White Sox. 7.5 is the total. I'd lean over just because both bullpens are pretty taxed from extra innings last night. And on top of that, I think the White Sox don't have the arms really to finish the job in the final couple innings. They're back out for action. We'll keep you posted on how things shake out with that battle in the Windy City. But college football, it's going to be here. It is right around the corner. You can smell it in the air. Week 0 is almost here. And a guy we had on a ton last year, and he does an awesome job, is George Reister. You see him on the CW. You check out his show, The Unafraid Show, which, by the way, is now part of On 3, at George Reister on X, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. So first of all, George, congratulations joining the group On 3. They do an awesome job. Andy Staples, a longtime friend of mine here. I love that you're with them. I love that you're on the CW. And I also love your Oregon Ducks. Can we start there? Because go ahead.
Well, first thing is, because you were just talking some baseball and you were speaking my language, I just have a quick message to all the Dodgers haters out there who cringed when Kyle Tucker came to the Dodgers, when we signed Edwin Diaz, and everybody, we need a salary cap. Everybody was crying. Those two players have been amongst the two. If the playoff roster were announced today, neither one of them may be on the roster.
That's a fact.
Like, Edwin Diaz is unplayable.
I don't know.
Unplayable.
I don't know if he's going to be back, George. I don't know if he's going to be. I think he's got something major wrong with him. And if it's not physical, it's mental right now.
Man, listen. The Dodgers announcers were talking about sending Kyle Tucker to designating him for assignment. they said send him to Arizona so he can get himself fixed. And Edwin Diaz, leave him off the playoff roster. I don't know what you got to do. I mean, is there a way in baseball where they like amnesty you in basketball where they just stretch the contract out? Because he got to go.
You get that Chauncey Billups treatment at the end with the Knicks where they just go, you know what, vet? You can go find another place. We'll pay overtime. George Reister is our guest.
Yes.
Former NFL Oregon tight end with us at George Reister on X. Oregon, I mean, you're an Oregon Duck, so you understand it differently. You always believe in this group, but this year feels a little bit different, man. Can you explain to me what Dan Lanning has built and why so many of us think that this is the team that wins the national championship this year?
I am finally glad that a lot of people are starting to see that the writing is on the wall. Let's go back in the time machine back to 2024. The preseason overwhelming favorite was Ohio State. Everybody's like, oh, my God, Ohio State is going to win. There's no way they lose, blah, blah, blah. Now, that year, they lost to Oregon in Eugene, and they lost to Michigan, and everybody thought that, this team is flawed. They're not making it. Well, they won a national championship. If Oregon had ever won a national championship with the way that this roster is right now, they would be predicting an inevitability like they did for that Ohio State team in 2024. You have four defensive linemen, Amari Washington, Bear Alexander, Tatum Tuioti, and Mateo Uiagalelei. All of them are either going to be first or second round draft picks. You have a corner, if he were eligible, in Brandon Finney, would be a first-round draft pick. You have Coy Parrish, transfer in from Minnesota. You have Aaron Flowers at safety, who played really, really well. And then you have Naeem Alford or Ife, who is going to be the starting corner, and they're fighting, and they both are like, somebody's going to be upset because you got two starting corners and only one more spot. And then you have a returning quarterback who has grown and matured and who NFL scouts are like, this would have been the second pick last year. He comes back. At the wide receiver crew, you got a big-time player in Evan Stewart, the most underrated wide receiver in college football in Jeremiah McClellan. And then you got the talented DeCorian Moore and a bunch of dudes on the bench that are phenomenal as well. And then you got an offense, and then in the running back room, let's not even talk about that. Jordan Davison, De'Aaron Hill, and the rest of the crew. And then you have an offensive line that's headed up by a preseason All-American center. You have a tight end who I have said, as much as I loved Kenyon Sadiq last year, I told the Jets tight end coach when I talked to him before he drafted Kenyon Sadiq, listen, Kenyon Sadiq is the right player for you, but I'm going to let you know the kid, Jamari Johnson, is coming next year, is going to be better. So, yes, this team is ridiculously talented. They are fast. They are physical. They are disciplined. And it would be like it's not if they go to the playoffs. It is how they get there and will they win.
George Reister with us, former NFL Oregon tight end, the CW college football analyst, Unafraid Show, part of On Three now on the Progressive Guest Line. Who scares you more in the Big Ten? Who is a bigger threat? Is it a retooled Indiana under Cignetti coming off the national title? Or is it Ohio State with Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith returning for another season together?
It's honestly Indiana. I mean, and that is no shade to Ohio State, but they feel more like a known quantity, particularly on offense. And the thing that people are missing about Ohio State is, of course, Ohio State, they don't rebuild. They just reload. They got talent everywhere. But as good as the new players are, they're not going to be as good as Arvell Reese, Caleb Downs, and Sonny Styles and his brother. That those are elite players, and McDonald in the middle, there's going to be a drop-off at every one of those spots, even though their replacements are going to be very good. But the thing about Indiana is that they cause so much confusion with their scheme, is that they have good players. They have returned a bunch. They got two super, super seniors back who got an extra year with that fifth year of eligibility. This team has caused so much chaos for quarterbacks and for offensive coordinators. So until they get that figured out, Indiana has to be the team that you're scared most about. But people are underrating two teams, though, Dustin. They're underrating Washington, which is going to be a very, very tough. They might make I predict that the winner of the USC-Washington game is the fourth Big Ten team that makes the college football playoff. And then the second team that nobody's talking about is Michigan. Because if Kyle Whittingham, if he can fix Bryce Underwood, that team is going to be a problem.
I love what you're saying here. George Reister is our guest, the CW college football analyst, Unafraid Show, part of On3, at George Reister on X. Let's go over to the SEC, where I think Texas is the most talented team, but I picked Georgia to win the league here. George, how do you think things shake out in the SEC between those two at the top?
Okay, I'll ask you a question. So if Texas is the most talented team, why did you pick Georgia to finish first?
Because I don't trust Steve Sarkisian, and if they have to go through Georgia, I trust Kirby Smart to be ready in that moment.
I am of the same opinion, sir. That was why I asked, because I knew what the answer was going to be. Georgia is the safest bet. What Kirby Smart has built, it is safe. It is consistent. It shows up when it is supposed to. It doesn't lay eggs. It is physical. It is fast. It is all the things that you want it to be. So I have Georgia predicted as winning the SEC. And I believe that the loser of the Texas-Ohio State game, which I do believe will be Texas, will miss the college football playoff.
I love that
and
one.
Texas's schedule is rough, but I also believe that if they lose that Ohio State game in Texas, that is going to be so mentally defeating that they are going to be hemorrhaging and trying to just grasp at straws. Because Sark is going to – like when you see his face in press conferences and everything, he's already feeling a massive amount of pressure because he knows – what more can they give me? I got the quarterback I want. I got the transfer running backs. I got the transfer wide receivers. I got a new coordinator. Every single – my O-line is retooled. Everything that I could – like there's no possible way to give him a better roster. So if he can't make the college football playoff this year, this could be his last season in Texas.
Totally agree. Nobody's done less with more. I think his resume is completely overrated with so many awesome opportunities. George, that was awesome. Would love to chat throughout the football season once again. Everyone check him out. The Unafraid Show, now part of On3, on X, at George Reister. Thanks for doing this tonight, man. Looking forward to chatting later.
Yep, thanks. Appreciate it, Justin. You have a good night.
You too, George. George Reister there. And my thoughts on the college football season, along with everyone here at VSiN, available in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Get it right now as part of becoming a VSiN Pro. You'll also get the NFL Betting Guide, Fantasy Life, Fantasy Football Guide, the VSiN Watch app, 24/7 video, everything we do at the website. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. All you have to do, head to VSiN.com/subscribe. We will hear from Steve Sarkisian on the other side of Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out, here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on Cashing Out, also back at it at Wrigley Field. We go to the bottom of the ninth inning, 3-3 between the Cubbies and the White Sox. The Cubs are still minus 198. That actually feels like a palatable price here. I think they're winning this one, guys. I don't think the White Sox have the bullpen. With the way things have gone the last couple nights, extra inning affair on Tuesday, now in this one, using some of their worst arms while the Cubs still have some guys available that they've yet to unveil. I think the Cubs are the way to look. I'm not laying $2 right now, but if this thing gets to extras and Chicago were to score, one thing that really has me vibing with this Cubs team is the offense is resilient. They were down a couple times on Tuesday, came right back, just didn't blink, didn't care, ready for the moment, great at bats, and then PCA, your MVP right now in the betting market at minus 165. Otani, the second shot at plus 130. Otani or PCA with a leadoff homer tonight, that puts him at 31. Otani hit his 30th. Does PCA go another one as he's homered in three consecutive games? And there we have in the ninth, a Carson Kelly leadoff hit. He's going to try and stretch it for two, and he is going to be in safely with a leadoff double. Just like that, Cubs minus 377, plus 311 with the White Sox. 7.5 is your in-game total. Juice on the under, minus 208. So this is kind of, if you wanted the Cubs at minus 198, you weren't willing to lay that. Again, I'm never going to encourage people to lay these big prices. But if you're willing to do that, if that's something that you do, If you were willing to go minus 198 before, minus 218 now. So it did just jump, but it's what, a 20 cent difference? And it's the same thing under 7.5. The only thing that kills you is a walk-off home run. But if they just plate that run at, on second and win the game, it's kind of the same thing. All right, I'll keep you updated on what happens in this game. Michael Conforto, the nine hitter, is currently at the dish for the Chicago Cubs. And that tying run, Carson Kelly out on second base, not exactly fleet of foot when it's the backup catcher. Not optimal if you are the Cubs here, but you have a chance to move him over with a sack, something on the right side of the infield, and then a fly ball deep to the outfield should play to more a hit. A hit wins the game if you're Michael Conforto. However, he's facing a 1-1 count right now against Richards, and he just went chasing a high fastball, 97 miles an hour, which brings the count to 1-2 on Conforto. You know what? I'm going to put the campus crawl to the side for just a moment. We're going to sweat this baby out together. I regret not getting in on this one. I was on VSiN Live, Mad Dog Sports Radio, with Patrick Maher as this game was starting. And I said, you know, if the Cubs get a lead, or the White Sox get a lead, I'm going to take the Cubs. Well, you know, driving over here, getting ready for the show. I'm listening to Matt Humans and Tim Murray on my way in. They're mentioning, hey, the White Sox are up by a run. Like, you know what? Should I fire on it right now? I opted not to, even though I was looking for that opportunity. I just wasn't locked in on the game with transitioning spaces at that time. But I am regretting it now because I could have gotten a way better number than where we're at right now with it being minus 366 on the Cubbies as Conforto takes ball two away. And this is interesting because Richards there has missed outside a couple of times in this at bat. He doesn't want to put anything inside on Conforto where he can turn on it, but he also has to be careful because on deck is PCA, and I'm actually surprised here. I would have walked Michael. I think I would have walked Michael Conforto. You're going to have to face PCA either with a runner on second. Wouldn't you rather have PCA up and a chance to get a ground ball and a double play? I know he's the MVP. I know he made you pay yesterday, but I don't know. I think I'd rather set up a force to make things easier for you here. That may not be the right strategy. It's just what I'm thinking. As Michael Conforto goes down looking, that is strike three. He didn't even get the bat off the shoulder. Carlos Beltran against the Cardinals in 2006 asked from one Conforto. And now that's one out in the ninth. Betting market shifts. It's still the Cubs minus 331 plus 277 with the White Sox. 7.5 is your in-game total. But what would happen if PCA hit another walk-off? Oh, nope, they walked PCA. That's the smart move. That's the prudent decision. Okay, that, I take back everything I said. See, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. I'm not just loud and wrong and won't admit that I was incorrect. That was the better strategy. Attack Conforto, walk PCA. That's why I'm sitting up here and I'm not managing a baseball team. It still could do them in. It could still lose the game, but either way, that's probably the smart decision. I don't know. What if Conforto, though, hits a blooper and you lose the game and you never see PCA? It just feels weird to make these plans for things that may not happen. Say as Suzuki comes up, he swings at the first pitch of breaking ball and grounds it foul out of play. We are looking at the Cubs minus 298 plus 251 with the White Sox. 7.5 is your in-game total. Suzuki is 0 for 4 on the night for the Cubs. Trevor Richards in for an inning and a third worth of work here for the White Sox. And that's a breaking ball that Suzuki pops up. And it's, oh, is that caught by Murakami? I think Murakami slid and caught that. That's the second out of the inning. What a play in foul ground. Murakami just by the shoestrings of the glove, the bottom of the glove, barely gets to this ball and secures the second out. I'm looking at the replay. That looks like a catch. I don't know what a catch is in the NFL. I know what a catch is in Major League Baseball. Oh, that indeed is a catch. What a play by Murakami at first base. Two outs in the inning. Suzuki goes down there, and now we are looking at who is up. It is, ooh, it's Alex Bregman. Bregman did tie this game at threes back in the seventh inning. This is kind of those situations you bring in an Alex Bregman if you're the Chicago Cubs. A guy that has been through this before in big spots. Clutch moments, will be calm here, and he has the winning run on second base. He drives it up the middle. Kelly is rounding third. There will be a play at the – nope, the ball doesn't get there. Cubs walk it off. Final score, 4-3. That is how this thing ends. Alex Bregman, he can be your hero, baby. Final score, 4-3. We go under the total of 9. The Cubs cash at minus 170. But we should note, not without a loss, at least seemingly a loss, with Kevin Gausman, who started this game. Gausman left in the fifth inning with some type of hand injury. It looks like it was to his glove hand, and trainers went out to look at it, and he left the game. I don't know what he did or what happened, but Kevin Gausman left the game in the fifth inning. That could be an issue down the road for the Cubs, but for now, they're celebrating the Crosstown Series. They're up 2 games in this set against the White Sox with 2 walk-off wins, back-to-back nights at Wrigley Field. Gausman, 4 1/3, 7 hits, 3 earned, 5 strikeouts. And this one had Michael Busch hitting his 15th of the year, Pete Crow Armstrong with his 31st of the year, and the Cubbies pick up another win. I like this team, man. I like the offense. I like the balance and the approach. You have a good defensive group, especially up the middle once Swanson's back at shortstop. But PCA, Horner, and Swanson, that is a great trio to make your pitchers look a little bit better. But if they don't have Gausman, that could be a big loss just because you acquire a veteran like him. It's not so much for now. It's more about October. What a veteran can bring where pitching has an advantage, where these critical moments and the pressure's on. You want a guy like Gausman, who's a veteran, has been around the block. Again, it was his glove hand. He was flexing it. I don't know if it was a comebacker. I don't know what happened, but more information, I'm sure, will be coming out throughout the day from Chicago as he left the game in the fifth, and the Cubs do get the win. PCA, still minus 165 to win National League MVP. Shohei Ohtani is plus $1.30 right now in the betting market. Some other news in Major League Baseball that jumped out to me, speaking of injuries, Hunter Goodman was placed on the 10-day IL earlier today. Now, why does that matter? Well, he was alive in the home run race as of earlier today, but now that he's going to miss some time hitting the IL with a shoulder injury, it takes him out. He has 34 home runs. He was 3 off the pace of Kyle Schwarber. Schwarber leads the way with 37. Also behind him, Matt Olson, 36. Yordan Alvarez, 36. Junior Caminero, 35. And then after them, it's Ben Rice. PCA is up to 31. And James Wood, who's injured, has 30 on the season. Schwarber is your favorite at plus $1.25. Alvarez is plus 190. Olson is 2.5 to 1. That's the guy I'm kind of circling that jumps out to me. Caminero is 5 to 1. But how about Ohtani, who's at 30? He's 7 off the pace. He's 100 to 1. Can we live in a world, people, where Shohei Ohtani just goes on a stretch where he's going nuts here? He's at 30 home runs on the season. And remember, he wants that MVP. He does not want to lose this to PCA. This is a guy who has historical perspective. He has pride. He knows what it all means. It doesn't mean you get there, but 100 to 1 when he's 7 behind Schwarber, I don't think that's nuts. If Schwarber were to hit the IL with him being up and Olson Alvarez on his heels, and Olson's been on a tear, by the way, this thing could get really interesting. I don't think it shakes out the way that it is right now, but if I'm betting anyone, I'd probably think about Olson at 2.5 or the long shot with Shohei Ohtani at 100 to 1 to lead the league in home runs. You're 20 minutes away from a conversation with Pro Sports Bettor. You are 45 minutes away from a conversation with Pro Sports Bettor Scott Spreitzer, former college football staffer, college football handicapper. Zach Bigelow will be with us in 20 minutes, and we'll do more college football with the campus crawl as Bill Belichick has a QB1 in Chapel Hill. Find out who it is next on Cashing Out.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, coming to you as always from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, broadcasting SiriusXM channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. 15 minutes from now, our boy, Coach Biggs will be with us on the program. Get his thoughts on week zero, week one. Zach Bigelow, who was awesome last week, and I'm happy to announce he will be doing a weekly appearance here on Cashing Out. I think it's going to be this time, but we'll keep you posted on that. Either way, the information was tremendous, and college football is going to be here very soon. Like, it is inching closer, and we got to get things in order here. And the North Carolina Tar Heels, well, it's been a chaotic offseason, to say the least. And they're trying to get things situated at quarterback. And the report coming out today from various outlets is that Billy Edwards Jr. is going to be named North Carolina's starting quarterback. I want to call him Uncle Baby Billy Edwards. Just feels like that's the vibe here. If you watch Righteous Gemstones, just feel like you're going to go to a big church one day and Billy Edwards Jr. will be given a sermon. But this guy's been around the block. If you remember, originally at Maryland, then at Wisconsin, where it didn't go well, injured early in the season a year ago, and was never able to get healthy. Sixth year for him. He started 16 games over four seasons, 11 in 2024 at Maryland, hurt in the opener, tried to play in week four, but was not right for the Badgers in a horrible season for Wisconsin. He now takes over a North Carolina team coming off a horrible season in 2025, where they went 4-8. He will play under new OC Bobby Petrino, which, let's give Petrino his credit in the past. Despite the transgressions, which, man, he fits right in Chapel Hill, huh? Despite the transgressions for Bobby Petrino, I would say he can call an offense. And we'll see if he can maximize Edwards, who was a pretty solid recruit when he first went to College Park there in Maryland. Keep in mind, for North Carolina, the win total's 4.5. They don't have defensive coordinator Steve Belichick. He is out on medical leave. The O-line was an issue a season ago. They picked up some help, but it's a lot of unknowns outside of the center position. Wide receiver, though, should be a strength for this team for Billy Edwards to get the ball to. Jordan Shipp is back, almost 700 yards, 6 touchdowns a season ago. Transfers from Lehigh and Mason Humphrey. Tretch Kekuhana, a Las Vegas kid who went to Bishop Gorman and was at Wisconsin with Billy Edwards a year ago. He is also there at receiver. Defensively, they got an edge from Richmond that could make an impact. They also return a linebacker who had the second most sacks in the ACC with 10.5 a year ago. And the secondary might actually be pretty solid for North Carolina, but you can't make me with your money bet them over 4.5 wins in the year of our Lord 2026. Next story, we go to Texas, where left tackle Trevor Goosby avoids something major, it seems. Sounds like he only suffered a bone bruise to his knee during practice on Tuesday. Reports came out that he left. It felt like it was catastrophic, which would have been huge for this team because that's an NFL left tackle. Trevor Goosby is going to be playing on Sundays, but it appears after an MRI, it's just a bone bruise. We'll find out about the timetable. More on that later on with Texas. And that's big for Arch Manning. Arch Manning is a guy that unfairly a year ago got crowned the king of college football. He had not done anything to warrant that. The pressure was enormous, and he did not look ready for that opportunity as the starting quarterback of the Longhorns. Now, late in the year, he started to play better. And a lot of people now are believing that is going to carry over from last season into this season. And part of that group is his head coach, Steve Sarkisian, who said this earlier in the day.
Well, I think part of it was, one, be himself. You know, I think sometimes we get into a situation where we try to be something that we're not, or maybe that we're not yet. And then the other part of it was, have some fun, man. Like we play football. We don't work football. And I think early in the season, Arch was trying to be so perfect. He was working so hard. He wanted to do everything so right that I think the second half of the season, he just kind of said, screw it, I'm going to go play. And when he started to play, you started to see a little bit more of the playmaking. You started to see the energy on the sidelines. You started to see him using his legs a little bit more. And I think the team really started to feed off of that.
That was Via the Herd with Colin Cowherd, Steve Sarkisian, head coach of the Texas Longhorns. One, painting behind him, spectacular. If I'm a Texas fan, I want a dupe of that so bad in my living room. Two, Sark's looking svelte. Is he taking my Wegovy pens out of the garbage and injecting himself? He's looking in shape, ready to go for potentially a national title run. I believe they can get there. I am saying negative things about Sark. I don't buy him as a head coach, but he can get over the hump. I'm willing to give people the opportunity to show me that they can change. people, for the most part, are who they are, especially once you get into this age. Like, I'm there at 40. Unfortunately, my fiance is learning. This is kind of who I am. I know you thought there was potential there, but it's limited. Okay, at this point, I just kind of have reached my peak, and unfortunately, there are limitations to what I can become. Steve Sarkisian, if you look, man, he's had a lot of really good opportunities, and he always does less with more. But I'm willing to believe the roster is good enough. However, what he just said about Arch Manning, I don't agree with. I'm not buying that down the stretch last year, he started playing freer and looser and being himself. You know what helps how you look better? How you end the season going 6-1 straight up after a loss at number 5 Georgia? Well, you get to face teams, or with a loss at number 5 Georgia mixed in, you get to go to Kentucky, where you barely escape with an overtime win by 3. You're the Texas Longhorns. Mark Stoops was fired last year. You barely beat him by a field goal in OT. You go to Starkville, another OT thriller in Starkville against Mississippi State. When we talk about the haves and have-nots in the SEC, it's Texas as the haves, and Mississippi State and Arkansas would be the have-nots, okay? Not exactly impressed there. Overtime win by Arch. 3-point win against Vanderbilt. I get it. They had Diego Pavia. That shouldn't happen with Texas. You also had 4 touchdowns at Arkansas. Congratulations, Arch. Sam Pittman was the head coach. I think at that point it was actually Bobby Petrino. So you beat a bunch of fired coaches. And then on top of that, people are hyping up him running for a 155 and 2 touchdowns against Michigan in the Cheez-Its Citrus Bowl. I love Cheez-Its, but come on. Let's not act like that was some special bowl game. Sharon Moore was previously the head coach at Michigan, and we know why he's not with the program. Actually, he might fit in at North Carolina if they have any openings there. But what I'd say is I understand Steve Sarkisian hyping Arch up, and this all may not matter. Because in spite of Sarkisian's shortcomings, in spite of Arch Manning and me not believing he's this transcendent quarterback, he may just need to be good. I think Texas is that loaded. When it comes to the run game, with especially Hollywood Smothers coming in from NC State, along with Relique Brown, they're going to bully people with the run game and the defense and the linebacker transfers that Will Muschamp is now the DC with. I think they're going to be so aggressive and so physical. It may not matter that Steve Sarkisian can't coach his way out of a paper bag, that I don't trust Arch Manning to make a ton of big-time throws. He may only need to be J.J. McCarthy this year. And trust me, Arch Manning can at least be J.J. McCarthy, because J.J. McCarthy was once J.J. McCarthy. Next story up in the campus crawl as we look at the top stories in college football. Lane Kiffin, coming off the top 25 AP poll being released this week, reacted to the LSU Tigers being number 11.
I don't think anything of it, and that's just not coach speak. I mean, I've been parts of where we've been low a year ago and finished really high, and where we've been really high and finished really low. So, now more than ever, it really shouldn't mean anything. I mean, we don't know as coaches, let alone media or coaches know other teams, because we barely know our own team how we'll play, because you have so many new players. There's no way you could figure it out, and I haven't studied it because there's no reason to, but I bet you analytics from the last 2 years of polls and where people have finished compared to where they start probably have been a long ways off compared to years ago.
Yeah, it's a completely imperfect science. He's correct. But from a gambling angle, this is what I got to thinking about when I heard Lane Kiffin say that. Because a lot of times early in the year, we use ranked versus unranked, especially when it's a situation when the unranked team is favored and the unranked team is the underdog, and you want to look for those opportunities to take advantage of a team that has a chip on its shoulder because of the numerical ranking next to their team when you look at the score bug at the bottom of the screen. I'm not sure it matters as much as it used to. With the way the conferences have been realigned, with everyone playing, you know, for the most part, similar schedules, and then at the end, we figure out who wins these leagues, and then they get multiple participants in the playoff. I'm not sure the rankings overall matter because they don't hold the power that they once had back in the BCS era, even in the last iteration of the college football playoff. So because of that, should we not be factoring these situations like I just mentioned, ranked versus unranked, or when they're facing a ranked opponent, what their ATS is? Because the real rankings don't matter until November when the college football playoff rankings drop. Do we ignore them until we get to there? Just some food for thought that I'm thinking about right now, where if they don't matter to these teams and they're not going to use it as motivation potentially, should we not use it as much when we're looking at some of these angles? in terms of trends in the college football season. And the VSiN is on the clock for the second annual Pro Football Futures Draft. 13 hosts and guests face off in a fantasy football style snake draft hosted by yours truly. Each pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown. Check it out. Don't just watch the Futures Draft. Profit from it. Tune in Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.